Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Deep Dive podcast. It's me, Tiffany, and Stephen.
Yep, that's right. And we are here today to talk about our favorite food. Well,
just food in general. I'm just happy talking about food in general.
Because I was thinking about vegetables.
Yes, and I want to ask you actually, do you care where your vegetables come from?
Well, as long as they're from a safe place, but first of all, I must qualify that I'm not a real vegetable lover.
Okay.
So it's not often on my radar.
I see. So you eat because it's there, not because it's there. You don't actively search for
it. Yeah, I like non-green vegetables.
So purple cabbage?
Like carrots and peas. Okay. Oh, that's green too, but
peas
yeah.
Peas. Okay. Anyway. I mean, so do you care about the price of vegetables?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Yeah. So when you go to a supermarket, would you be looking for what's cheapest? Or
sure.
Are there going to be other factors that you're considering?
I am taken in sometimes by the packaging. If it looks cleaner and better packed.
Like less dirt in there, is it?
Yeah,
and they tell you don't need to wash. Triple wash.
Oh, no. I'll still wash it anyway. Okay. I don't believe in any of these. Okay. Pre-wash stuff, but yeah, but basically price is a big factor, and of course the way it's packaged and marketed.
Yeah same. So I think for me, when I go to the supermarket, I think about whether it's cheap. So if it's 50 cents cheaper, definitely I'm reaching out for the less than 50 cents.
And I think we are not unlike most people, you know, but this is a bit of an issue because as you may have heard, Minister for Sustainability and the Environment Grace Fu has announced that we will be replacing our 30 by 30 goal. A quick refresher, that's our goal to grow 30% of our food needs by 2030.
Yes, that's right. And so the new goals would be to produce 20% of our fibre consumption, and that's your leafy and fruited vegetables, bean sprouts, taugay, you know, your mushrooms. And then 30% of our protein consumption, and that's eggs, seafood, by 2035. So we've shifted that goal backwards.
We've extended the period. So why did this target shift?
Yep. So what does this shift mean for our food security, and how can we overcome the issues faced by our farmers or our food producers?
So we've got some food producers here. Ray Po is founder and managing director at Artisan Green.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Tiffany. Nice to meet you all.
And Prof Paul Ting is adjunct senior fellow at the Center for Non-Traditional Security Studies at RSIS.
Hi. Pleased to meet you both.
Okay.
So, both of you, were you surprised that the 30 by 30 target needed to be shifted?
Not at all, actually. In fact, I was asked by CNA to comment on that last year, and I did say that, you know, we may have to re-examine that aspiration.
Okay, why is that?
Because it was just an aspiration. Okay. And the main reason is that, you know, when it was announced in April 2019, that was just the beginning of Singapore getting back into agriculture and food.
Okay.
Because we had actually gone away from agriculture for many years, starting in the 1980s. And coming back means that we lost several generations of knowledge. People actually knew how to farm. Okay. So folks like him actually, fantastic new entrance to farming.
Mm.
But the bottom line is this, though. The emphasis of 30 by 30 really was on modern approaches, very modern approaches. High-tech approaches to farming. Apart from trying to strengthen the current, you know, more traditional farms, you know. And straight away, as you mentioned, the cost pricing was a major factor. Apart from pricing itself, there were other issues that were related to, for example, you know, whether the readiness of the technology. 30 by 30, in fact, put a lot of emphasis on what we call alternative novel proteins.
Okay.
Things like cultivated meat, plant-based proteins, you know. And really, the science and technology were not ready yet.
Okay. So in other words, we would have to do things differently from the way traditional farmers used to, right? And that was the idea to help us leapfrog to that 2030 goal.
Exactly, but in a realistic manner. Because as Graceful pointed out, you know, I mean, we're a very resource-limited environment here in Singapore, you know. So basically, you know, bridging on to the new Singapore Food Story 2 is a lot more realistic, actually. Because it builds on the old categories of imports, you know, self-production, and so on, kind of, you know, and just building on that. But I also have questions on the new targets, quite frankly.
Right, we'll talk about that in a moment. Because the whole idea is that it's ironic if we're going backwards and then, you know, starting from scratch again. So, Ray, you've come into this space. You're actually a relatively new farmer in that sense, if I may add, and a new modern farmer, right? Yeah, so what made you get into it?
So when I first started, I just thought that this was very interesting to marry agriculture and technology when I found out about vertical farming.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started, like, there wasn't any government. Oh, there were government grants, but it wasn't as active as of now. So I decided to do research, and I thought that this would be the future of farming, and that's why I took the plunge.
Did your research tell you that you would be able to make money from this venture?
In my own financial modeling, yes.
In your own
And in my head, yeah.
As should a business, actually.
It was meant to be a hobby kind of farm, but then it just kind of grew outwards from me. So the more we built, the more we realized that that there was a market out there, and how other people were treating the business versus how we were doing it differently, I thought that like we would be able to do better.
Okay. So let me ask you point blank now. Mm-hmm. Is this a profitable business to be in?
Yes, it can be if you have economies of scale. At this current point, I would say that like smaller farmers would have to grow very expensive produce, which everyone laments about.
Yes.
In order to survive. But that's just a factor of input costs. I mean, rental costs, labor costs, electricity that we all have to undertake.
So you're saying you have to sell fancy veg?
We have to in order to survive.
Yeah. And, but, I mean, in your financial modelling, you would have thought about things like electricity and water, space as well.
Yes.
So were there sort of, from 2018 when you started your business until now, how have things changed for you?
Rental has gone up every single year, year on year. Mm. Electricity, unfortunately, has gone up as well. So there are like exogenous like factors that we can't control, like electricity. Mm. So,
with the war, oil prices going up, things like that, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's been tough, but what we had to do was just buckle down and look at what kind of produce that we're growing. So if we are talking about growing indoors, you can't grow Asian leafy vegetables. It just does not make sense to us. So we have to target a different segment. So we have to grow things like microgreens, herbs that are of higher value. And that's just for us to survive and grow big enough to a scale whereby we can tackle other produce that's more mass market driven.
Mm. Well, Prof, if we come back to you, because the whole idea of having all this farming was also to have some kind of food security for the country. We know in Singapore that, you know, most of our food, in fact, almost all of our food is imported from somewhere in the world. Yeah. So why is food security such a big issue, even though we know it is, to a certain extent, unrealistic?
Mm. That's actually a tough question to answer. Yeah. Obviously, food security is something that we all want to be, you know, comfortable with, right? Mm-hmm. To be assured, you know. But given our limited resources, we will always have to recognize that we depend on imports, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's where the term resilience comes in.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I actually like what Chan Yun-Sing was saying years ago, you know, that you want resilience because in times when your supply chain from outside is interrupted, you want to have the capability to actually produce a little bit of yourself kind of thing. So having recognized that then, you know, we're going to say, okay, the 1090, which was old model before 2019, then it evolved into the roughly 30-70, but not quite true actually because it's 30% nutrition. And now it's more difficult to measure. You have 20% fibers, 30% protein, right?
Yeah.
That's only seafood and eggs.
Yes.
What about fish?
Yeah.
See, in the old pre-2019, we actually aspired to be like 15% sufficient with fish, roughly. And then vegetables, you know, and then eggs, right? Kind of thing. So going forward, right, I think to be very clear about what food security really means for the country, we need to be very clear about what our metrics are to measure.
Okay.
And to me, we still don't have very clear metrics on what we aspire to and what we are capable of. You see, like greens, for example, to me, pardon me saying, greens are not a food security issue.
Yeah.
It's not a food security food.
So it's a nice to have, but not a must have.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just like, you know, I mean, some of the farms that I know that are successful grow kale, but how many Singapore households eat kale?
Right.
Yeah. They're actually crying for Asian leafy greens, you know, which we can't produce, as you rightly pointed out, you know, at a price premium which the average consumer is willing to accept.
Okay.
That's why we always face that problem of, you know, the price.
Yes.
But then, does it mean that these are two different things? Because I imagine food security is having something I can feed my people with in the event of an emergency. I mean, I could put bags and tons of rice, you know, in the storage in a bunker somewhere.
Yeah.
I could put cereal, all these dried foods. I could put canned food.
Mm-hmm.
That's food security, is it not?
Yes and no. Okay. Food security, if you go back to the universal definition, right?
Yeah.
Acceptance, you know, food security means giving people access at all times to safe, nutritious food.
Okay, so it's not only during an emergency.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's right, yeah. Which is why the resilience concept is so important for us in Singapore. Because we know that we also import, right? Mm. So in times of crisis, the beginning of the Ukraine war and so on, what do we do? Okay, how do we actually make sure that we have enough during those times of crisis? And that's where folks like you come in, actually.
Right.
And for our indoor farms, can they in fact, rejig their production to meet those disruptions in shortages?
Can they? Yeah. Would you be able to ramp up all of a sudden and grow more veg?
Depends on the system that you build. Yeah. But for our own systems, we are able to turn it around and change it to like Asian leafy vegetables if we were asked to.
But I still see a disconnect here. So we're talking about food security. So the government obviously wants us to, not be insecure in that way. But at the same time, farmers like you need to be profitable. Mm. Yes. So the targets are really different.
Yeah. That's right.
So is there already a disconnect here?
So the other factors as well, I would say most of our farmers here can grow vegetables. It's also about the downstream supply chain, how do we distribute, how do we sell these produce, how do we market it? So a lot of farms right now are spread out across Singapore, north, south, east, west, because we're all indoor farms, barring the ones in Lim Chu Kang side. So in order for us to distribute our produce effectively, we have to travel to various parts of the country and pick up.
It's not a very big country.
It's not a very big country, but it still costs. It still costs. And the thing is, your basket value, every time you deliver by yourself, it's going to be very high because you can only sell your category, your own produce, and you're not spreading the cost. So there's a lot of inefficiencies right now due to farms being located and spread across located all across Singapore. So I think one of the new things would be the multi-tented facility that the government has proposed. Mm-hmm. I think that will be interesting because that really reduces distribution costs. Because from all the farms I've seen, they are able to grow. However, it's the downstream distribution that everyone faces that have issues.
But some would argue that is your problem, So why not have all the fellow entrepreneurs form an association, come up with your own plan, and then work with a logistics company that can help you solve these things? Why must the government step in to do that?
So my other company actually does it at this point in time. So my other company is called Merchant Brothers. We do food distribution. Mm. So we focus a lot on local produce, local farmers, because I'm a farmer myself. Mm-hmm. So there are costs involved with that. Mm-hmm. So for the government to step in, it's actually just more about the location of this facility being able to have better rental, because we're competing against imports which are already subsidized in other countries, and this is already an unfair playing field, I would like to say.
But again, they're gonna say I give you a vegetable building in some industrial estate, then the guys who sell pork will say, why don't I have a meat building, that has all the chicken and pork? And
So it's a never-ending list of demands, right?
That is true. I mean, it's just what we prioritize, I would imagine, just similar to water as well. If we never invested in the desalination plant, new water, we wouldn't have got the additional
taps. But water and vegetables, I would argue, are different. I mean, we need water a lot more than we need vegetables, right?
That's I need vegetables.
No, but I mean to survive,
I guess so.
Actually, not really true.
No?
No, because vegetables are your main source of minerals. And right now, the world is facing what we call a triple burden of malnutrition.
Yeah.
Overnutrition, undernutrition, and insufficient minerals.
Okay.
It's become a real problem.
But I'm just saying on a day-to-day, we can't live without water, but I can live without vegetables for a few days.
For 5 days.
For some period. Right? Yeah. So if you had to choose between which is the more essential, obviously water is. So I'm saying we can't really compare vegetables to water.
Okay. Agree with you to some extent, because I think food is not just vegetables. Mm. Right? So when you talk about food security, you have to talk about that basket of foods, which is very key. Now, actually, I want to address one of your points, The big question is really, have we in fact securitized food the way we securitize water? Okay, the water example is a very good one. Now, my colleagues and I have debated this for years, actually, and in the security community, we would argue that we haven't quite securitized food. Mm. Because to securitize water means that you remove water as a security threat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We haven't removed food as a security threat. Mm. Now, to do that means investments, okay? And that's where, you give example of vertical buildings for vegetables, right? Now, I would ask the question, why can't we do the same thing for livestock? Mm. It's a question that has to be asked. How serious do we treat food security?
Okay, I see.
Come up with new water, which therefore says we value water a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you're saying we should do the same for food as well.
Well, okay, I think that we need an approach where we explicitly address food as a security issue. Which is why, in fact, I just telling a little bit here, at NTU, we have a center called the Center for Non-Traditional Security Studies.
Yeah.
Because we're recognizing now that beyond military security, there are a lot of non-traditional security issues, water, you know, energy, food, their labor amongst them. So we need to ask ourselves as a nation, if you talk about a whole of country security, whole of security kind of thing, have we in fact securitized food? Now, some of us will argue that we actually haven't done that.
Okay. So assuming that's not the plan, you know, from now to 2035, do you think the new goals are realistic? Do you think we can get there? Well, there's like
currently,
silence.
I think we're at 3% for fiber, vegetables. I need to get to 20%.
10 years.
It is still a stretch. I would say that we have to really learn from past mistakes. There have been mistakes, but it's just to me, it's not the end of the road. We have to learn and move forward. Mm-hmm. So what we see right now is that really downstream logistics is an issue. So being able to address that with a new facility, like a centralized distribution facility, that would really help. The other thing would be like sales channels as well. The government's left it to like private market forces for us to sell to anyone that we want. Okay. However, I feel as if like there needs to be some form of like a perhaps like a demand base that they can provide for us, whereby perhaps like government institutions.
So in other words, if things continue as they are, then you are skeptical of this new goal. That it probably won't
if
work
left
either,
to
right?
Your I own mean, devices, yeah. Basically. Yes.
If it keeps on like that.
I think that there would need to be some government.
Do you agree, Prof? Actually. What do you think?
I do, actually. And especially for the protein target, 30%.
You think we'll get there?
I don't think we will.
Okay.
Ah. Because even, you look at seafood, right? We're way behind on seafood.
Yeah.
We're good with
eggs.
But you just can't survive with eggs alone.
Yeah.
What about the other, poultry, for example, we actually have to import all those still. Huh? Now, fish. I actually am a fish farmer. I just sold my fish farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was farming for quite a few years.
Yeah, I've always known you'd be a bit fishy.
Okay, no pun intended. Anyway, seriously, though, I mean, I wanted to, to actually do what I teach, right? So with the two other persons, we actually bought the fish farm at Keelong.
Right.
Oh. We farmed for 5 years. Every year we lost money.
Oh.
Every year.
Okay.
Taking advantage of the government subsidies and so on.
Yeah.
It was because farming is tough business in Singapore. Mm. I mean, not just vegetable farms, but especially fish farms. And you notice that the latest statistics show that our self-production of fish actually gone down tremendously.
Right.
And even in spite of a few success stories, right? And fish is the most, to me, desirable protein, from the nutrition perspective, also legacy protein. So I'm actually quite pessimistic that we'll meet those targets within 10 years, unless we have new initiatives, new mindsets, which is totally possible. Okay. One of the big unknowns, of course, is the private sector, private investment coming in.
Mm.
I think everything revolves around money.
Yes.
Give profits.
Of course.
So if companies can see advantage, for example, is there a new way of farming fish in Singapore?
Is there? Vertical tanks?
Possible. Again, it comes back to the cost in the CAPEX itself, right?
Yeah,
cost of producing those facilities, Now, actually, I quite like the idea of that Grace Wood articulated, which is, providing the infrastructure. I proposed this years ago, and the Koreans are doing it, proposing infrastructure. But if the downstream issues are not solved, you're not solving the issues at all. Mm. You've got to solve the entire supply chain, entire value chain.
Right.
So the production is just one part of it. Inputs for production. We're importing all our inputs at the moment. Highly expensive. And if you don't have inputs, you cannot farm, basically. Yeah?
But again, some would argue that this supply chain will sort itself out if there is an incentive or there is money to be made.
Yeah,
so if the company can see an end goal where they make a profit, then they'll figure out a way to get there. So again, that begs the question, why should the government come in and play that role? I mean, why is this sector sort of has not been strong enough to be able to figure out the pathway to making more money and therefore selling more overall?
I think it's not just about vegetable farming. Yeah. It's also mushroom, fish as well, eggs. Yeah. I think, like I mentioned, I think it's about economies of scale. We do need scale. Yeah. And at the very start, when we first started out this initiative, like 30 by 30, a lot of new farmers came into the picture and they thought that this would be all about productivity, throwing technology, automation, and then you'll be able to get there. But we don't have that kind of a traditional agricultural knowledge. So like they had to learn from scratch, and they failed because there have been a lot of unknowns to them. Okay. So I think like right now that we know more through these failures and also like lessons learned, we know what steps to take next. And what we talked about is like that centralized distribution area that really is important, because in terms of sales wise, that's it's a really key factor for us to be able to distribute efficiently.
I also wonder, even if you're doing all that, do we have enough in terms of numbers in Singapore to make it worthwhile?
So the demand,
right.
Demand
and supply. So you can create the supply, you're very productive. Will you still be profitable and be able to survive well enough?
So based on our own financial calculations, again, for our new farm, we will be profitable because we need the economies of scale. We're able to automate things that needs to be automated. So like, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, build our own machines. There are a lot of things that are off the shelf.
Okay.
So like, perhaps like the previous generation of like the farmers, or well, not generation, the ones that have shut down, they may have been more focused on like fundraising.
Right.
And then automating, having a sexy story for the investors. But for us, we know what's important to be able to automate, and we don't over automate in certain.
So I guess my question is that if you feel that you can, you know, as the company, if you get enough people buying your product, you will be able to make enough
money.
But is that the case if you're only one of five? If there were 10 similar companies just like yours, would that kill the market? Because, well, there's so few of us to begin with.
I think like we're able to grow different categories of products.
Okay.
So we should still be able to survive.
Because I guess what I'm getting at is also that eventually our companies need to be looking outwards towards supplying not just Singapore, but the region. And therefore, treat yourself as a real, like an MNC, and grow in that way. Then therefore, you are really looking at the economy.
But at the same time, I'm just thinking, why would Malaysia want to buy a Singapore product?
Give them a reason, right?
Given you actually raised a very interesting question, you know. What do you count as self-production? Now, do you count a Singapore company that's actually growing its food in Johor Bahru and bringing it back here? Is that self-production? That's a good question to ask. Now, what about all the pork from Pulau Bulan? It's basically licensed to us, right?
That's right.
Is that part of self-production? Okay.
Yeah.
I think we need to, basically what I'm saying is we need to change our way of thinking as to what is self-production. If we keep thinking it's going to be produced on mainland Singapore, what about the other 63 islands that we have?
That's true.
Why can't we produce there?
So because at the end of the day, if I'm thinking as government, I just want to know that when I push a button, you have to send it to me.
Yes.
And I don't care where you're growing it, actually.
But your earlier question is an interesting one. You know, why is it so difficult to actually make a success here? One is the market size.
Yeah.
We all know it's a small market, right? Now, the other is actually the risk. Farming is high risk, especially fish farming. It's such a high risk than vegetable farming because you've got some element of control there.
Yeah.
Most of the kelong were exposed to the open sea. Half my fish actually die.
Oh.
That high mortality.
Because I was about to say, when you raised your example about creating setting up a new farm, you know, economies of scale, I feel like there's a chicken egg situation here, because I did not mean that.
It's okay, I will leave it alone.
I did a Steve joke. But what I mean by that is that, you know, you learned that to do better, you need to open up a new farm, but that means extra capital. That means you have to put in resources, which some other company might go, you know, we don't want to take that risk. So it's risk at the end of the day. So so at the same time, farmers are going to go, I don't know exactly when do I start scaling up, because scaling up means there is a chance that I might do better, but there's no guarantee. Or worse, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, that raises another interesting issue, which is the land tenure issue. How long do you want to keep investing? You know,
the
whole complex of issues here, which is why it goes back to my more fundamental question, right? Have we securitized food and the food production process?
Okay. Basically, we're at this point now where we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place to a certain extent. Prof, what would you suggest? What should we do? What should be our next steps?
Well, I think we continue doing what we're doing, focus on the imports, have a certain level of self-production here, but that's not for food security. That's for resilience, which is very different thinking altogether.
Okay.
Resilience means that you maintain the ability of farms like his, you know, to continue producing, even though you make a profit, you don't make a profit. But when it comes time for emergency, they can then give us the capability to produce what is needed.
Okay.
Which
he can turn it to leafy
vegetables.
And the government needs to come in during times of emergency, which inevitably, government support is very key in terms of crisis and emergency. Okay.
But I mean, how are we going to also try and convince the public that, you know, pay extra $1 for made in Singapore?
So like for us, we've always been producing higher, more premium value products. Right. So like they compare us against organic imports. So we are on par in terms of pricing there. With the new farm, we definitely want to bring the pricing down because we're not always going to be in the premium pricing category. We want to bring it down lower. Like we produce completely without pesticides. Right. So we feel as if there is a premium to be garnered.
But what is your ideal goal where you can be sold in a typical NTUC FairPrice supermarket and...
Yes, we're currently like FairPrice Finest, but we want to be in mass market, like FairPrice stores, Sheng Siong, pretty much everywhere. Like, so we're within reach to the like, you know, average Singaporeans.
Yeah.
But to do that, you really have to try and bring the cost down.
And we are. So like we are using like technology to do that. So and we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, like I mentioned. Like we're just buying off-the-shelf automation.
Yeah. But you don't sell bok choy, right?
No. Because not as of yet.
Otherwise, you get bogged down.
But I have one last solution to put on the table, right? I just want to know, like, would it help, let's say, if we tell, you know, places like, you know, schools, prisons, hospitals, airlines, even, you know, the Singapore Armed Forces that...
Eat your vegetables.
No, they have to, like, take, I don't know, 50%, 70%, even 100% of your food from local. And will that actually, you know, or is that too unrealistic?
No, in fact, I think that's part of the solution. Mm. In fact, I was talking to a farmer from Kranji, you know, about this graceful announcement, right? You know, building the building, you know, and he said, look, it's not going to solve the problem unless the off-taker is guaranteed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, this is where the armed forces come in. I mean, the armed forces can basically take out all your vegetables if they want to.
I mean, I don't know if they will take microgreens.
I think, like, there needs to be a base demand that's driven by the government. Yeah.
Mm. So that you know that you have a firm contract. You know that at least every month there is a guaranteed, you know, like, your baseline is set right?
Yeah. And that makes sense. Buy from your fellow countrymen first before buying from elsewhere in the world. Mm.
No, but that's a nice tagline. But
easier said than done sometimes. Yeah. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming, sharing those thoughts with us. Of course, all of you watching at home, any thoughts, please do drop us a note. We do love to hear from you.